PPI.org. This is your tune to KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. You are listening to Disability and Progress, where we bring you insights into ideas about and discussions on disability topics. My name is Sam. I'm the host of the show. Miguel Vargas is my engineer tonight. Thank you, Miguel. Charlene Dahl is my research team. Thank you, Charlene. And
I'm here.
Hello. Our topic tonight, I Hear the Black Raven, a petite memoir by Claire, as I have introduced in the email. Ayatoro?
Ayatoro, yes.
Ayatoro. Thank you, Amber. I'm so sorry. Who said I was good with names? So thank you very much for joining us tonight. I appreciate that. And what a good book. Thank you so much for sharing, and I appreciate, and we're going to talk about that and you and all that you're up to. You do a plethora of things. So can you tell us a little bit about you and how you became a writer?
Yeah, so my pen name is Claire Ishii Ayatoro. My real name is Amber Henry. I was born in Soso, Mississippi, a little town outside of Laurel in the southern part of Mississippi. And I just think that I have been a creative person throughout my life. I was born into a creative family, a family of musicians and artists. And so that kind of rubbed off on me, and that ties into how I have been so involved in many different things throughout life.
So your title, I Hear the Black Raven, that is your book, and we'll talk about that book tonight. But first, is this your first work published?
Yes, it is. It is.
What was that like to have something like this published?
Oh, man. So it was like, well, first of all, the writing process was very, I had to be very vulnerable in that writing process.
Yes.
To kind of, you know, show the aspects of my life that aren't so readily visible to everyone. Mm-hmm. And that was the biggest thing about it, is being vulnerable. But also having it to be public.
Yes.
That part is like, that was very difficult. I had to get over myself to allow that to happen. But the other than that, the publishing process, it wasn't too bad. I had a great team behind me, and we put it all together and put it out there for the public to read.
I want to talk about the meaning behind your title, The Black Raven. What did that mean?
Yeah, so The Black Raven. So in the book, I kind of talk about briefly like the different meanings that ravens have, like the mm-hmm. different connotations in different cultures. And I wanted to like try to put a positive spin on that. And so I tried to say that there are things that happen in life that may seem like terrible experiences, But depending on how you hear it, how you translate what's going on and what's happening in your life, it can turn out to be a positive experience. And so that's where the Black Raven came into play in that kind of that aspect.
You have an interesting statement, if I can state it. At the beginning of your book, it says, at the writing of this memoir, I am 31 years of age, not quite young, not quite old, but at somewhat of a checkpoint. What did that mean?
Wow. So for me, it's kind of like, so a checkpoint. That's like you've covered a lot of ground. And then, but there's still a lot of ground that you have to go. And so I use that point, that phrase checkpoint to say that I have, you know, I have a level of experience and a level of wisdom that I can share, but that being said, I still have a long ways to go and more growth that's going to happen in my life. But I think, you know, 31 years of age, that's a pretty good place to be able to give something to the world.
Yes, it is. You have managed to do a lot of things in your life. When I look at your list, I think, OMG, I feel like I have a long way to go, and I don't even want to tell you how old I am, but you're like an engineer, an artist, a musician, an author, and a founder. And so you were diagnosed with bipolar 1 disorder. And yes. I'm sure that was kind of a blow, because it came when you were really in your kind of prime of growth, you know? And can you tell us a little bit, for the person who doesn't, you know, they kind of clump all mental illnesses, what bipolar is? And I don't know how many different kinds there are.
So from my understanding, so bipolar disorder, the main features of bipolar 1 disorder, which is what I was or have been diagnosed with, is having periods of mania and periods of depression. And along that, those are the two extremes, but within that, within those two extremes are plenty of other emotions and things that you can have. But there's bipolar 1 and bipolar 2. And then there's like cyclomithia, I think, which is like kind of a milder form. But bipolar 2 people, they mostly experience depression, and I don't believe they excel into the manic aspect of bipolar disorder.
So you were diagnosed, let's see, in your 20s, yes?
Yes.
And how did that? I mean, it seemed like you were doing so many things at that time. How did that affect your life at that time? And I want to remind everyone, you come from a very small town. And I know sometimes small towns can be difficult to be in when you have a disability. There is really nowhere to hide. Can you talk a little about that?
Oh, yeah. Well, so luckily for me, I live in a town that's like, I'm surrounded mostly by family, and and the people in the neighborhood, they're mostly friends. Like, they're, so it's a bunch of friends and family who have been very caring and understanding of me. And they've been checking in, you know, every once in a while to see how I'm doing. And so I feel very fortunate to have had that in my experience with bipolar disorder. But I was diagnosed in my 20s, and that came, so I kind of suspected, like, in my prior years, that something was amiss, that something wasn't quite right. And I researched bipolar disorder back then, and I was like, this could be me. But then when I was actually diagnosed, it was like a double-edged sword, I guess. So it came as a, like, oh, there's something to this, like, there's a name for this, and it fits me. And so that means that there is treatment for it. But on the other hand, I realized that people with mental illness, they face stigma. And so that was like one of the major things that I struggled with, was the shame of being diagnosed with a mental illness and what that meant for me in my future.
And how did this affect your family and friends?
So yeah, they at first, like, I didn't tell all my friends right away, my family, they were the ones who knew about it. And it was something that we recognized mental illness, but it was something that they didn't really want to accept for me. Like, it was like, you know, we're gonna pray about this, and you know, you're gonna be healed from this, and that's what we tried that in the beginning. But you know, mental illness is like, you know, it's a physical illness, it's like any other disability. And so you may have it, and even though it doesn't go away when you pray, that doesn't mean, you know, anything bad. It's just, you know, an illness like any other illness. But that was kind of the experience, you know, we'll pray about this and, you know, give it to God and he'll take care of it. And, but that was kind of their perspective on it.
In your book, The Black Raven, I see the Black Raven, you talk a little bit about the states of hypomania and mania. Can you describe to people what the difference between those two states are?
Okay, so hypomania is like it's a lower form of mania, but it's not necessarily the full-blown mania. So in hypomania, you kind of feel like you have, or it's like you have a little bit of control over your mind, your mental state, but also you have like all this energy and all these ideas to do different things. Or in my experience, it's I have a lot of goals that I set during that stage because I have the energy and the mental capacity to like think around all these different ideas and activities. And so when I go to do these projects and fulfill these goals, everything moves pretty smoothly and things just flow. It's like a state of flow where creativity and productivity kind of have this synergistic effect. But with mania, all that goes out of the window. Like, you don't have any control over your mental state or the ideas that come into your head and what to do. Like, in my book, I talk about some of my manic episodes. They had paranoia, there's running, there's like denying things. It's you're all over the place. I don't know that I can't really put clear words to it now, but to sum it up, you're just not in control of yourself.
So the hypomania, which explains why, you know, you've been able to, accomplish so much, and it's really pretty amazing to me. But the hypomania, do you realize that you're there then? Do you realize, okay, I'm in this state and I need to be careful? Do you realize that that's happening?
So in the beginning, when you don't really know what's going on, it's hard to be aware that you're in that state. But as you grow in bipolar disorder, like when you're diagnosed and you go through therapy and you go through things of that nature, you can sense, like, when you get in that state, that you're in that state. And so you can be like, oh, maybe I need to tell my doctor about this, that I need to up my medication, or, that type of thing. But yeah, you can see that you're going in that direction.
It must be kind of hard, though, because hypomania, like, You can get a lot done. It must be really tempting to try to stay there. Is it, do you know, like, do you have times that you, do you know about your length of time that you can stay there without going into the other state, in the mania state, or does that not, is it all bets are off?
So it's not all bets are off, but it's a very pleasurable state to be in, if I can say that. But you don't, I mean, you can't say it's there's not a set time limit. Like it can be a day and then you pop over into mania, or it could be a month or 3 months and then you hop over into mania. Like there's no defining line between hypomania and mania.
This was we were talking about your states of mania and hypomania. This was a very personal book, I'm sure, to you. How did you put that part of you down that has that, because that's a very real part, you know, to not tell someone too much, you know, we all hold it, right? We all hold how much we're gonna let everyone know about us, and some things you talk about and then other things you just don't. But how did you had to make yourself very vulnerable, incredibly vulnerable. How did you do that?
Wow. So I think the how I did it was I put myself in other people's shoes, and I was like, what would they want to hear, or what would they want to know about this condition? And also I tried to tell it in a story format to where it would be more, I guess, digestible and maybe impactful. But yeah, it was more of getting outside of myself and trying to put myself in other people's shoes and doing it that way. Because if it was just me completely, there was there would be a, like there were plenty of stories in there that I just did not want to let go.
When you did do that, how did you feel? Did you ever regret any parts that you kind of put in?
I was thinking about that recently, if I regretted anything, and I believe I wrote it to where I don't regret what I put in there. Like I accepted that this was me, like that's me. I accept that part of my life, and I wrote the things that I wanted to write that I was comfortable writing and letting other people know. And yeah, I don't regret anything that I put in there.
Well, those are the best books to write, I guess. If you're going to have to spill it, best to not regret it later, right? I want to go dive into your book and talk a little bit about when the Black Raven first visits you. Can you talk about that and what did that mean to you? Set the stage for us.
So, like the Black Raven, it when she first comes to visit, I'm not expecting her. Like I'm just there, and it's like it's me pre-bipolar disorder, if you can imagine that. It's like me pre-bipolar disorder diagnosis and her coming in to kind of warn me that things are going to change for you, and just be aware of that, but don't be discouraged, and like draw on good times, draw back on the good times in life to get you through what's coming. And so I was kind of taken off guard by her first visit, which, and all this is fictional, like if those who are listening, the Black Raven, she's not really, talking to me. But it's a part of the book where I kind of trace my development throughout the stories.
You're talking in the book about creating a piece for an artist that you admire and how you presented to her. Can you tell us about this and how it affected your confidence, you know, during the time and when she accepted it?
Oh, wow. So Emily King, she's an awesome performing artist. And I had the opportunity to make a piece of woodwork for her. And I call them three-dimensional pieces of woodwork because I put wood on top of each, on pieces on top of each other and fix them with screws and like lifting mechanisms so they project out at you. And so I got the opportunity to make one for her, and it was initially like a impulsive thing. Like I was scrolling on Instagram and I noticed that she was having a tour coming up, and I was like, man, what if I could make, and see, I feel like that was a bipolar moment. that I could do this thing that seemed impossible, but I was like, maybe I can make something for her and, you know, give it to her at the concert. And so I went about, you know, I got the ticket, even though if I wasn't going to be able to give it to her, I still wanted to go to the concert because she's awesome. So I got the ticket. I made the piece for her and I traveled to Tennessee. And that's when everything really began, because I have this burlap sack that I brought with me with the piece of wood art in it into the venue. And when I got to the front desk, I was like, I have this gift that I want to give to Emily King. Is it okay, you know, if I bring it into her at the meet and greet? And they were like, oh, we'll get someone who can make that decision, just, you know, hold on for a minute. And I was like, oh man, I don't know what they're gonna say. But they came and they inspected it and they were like, you're good to go. So I was like, yes, great. I can at least, you know, give it to her. And so I got in the meet and greet line and it came my turn to, you know, greet her. And so I walked up to her. I was like, hey. She was like, hey there, how are you? And all this stuff. She was just like, you know, her smile just lit up the room. It's just big and beaming. And I introduced myself. And then I was like, I have a gift for you. And I took the piece of art out of the sack and I presented it to her. She was like, oh man, this is so gorgeous. And we talked a little about it, and she talked about how when she was younger, she tried out part, she had a wood burning set and she tried it, but she burned herself, and so she kind of like stayed away from it after that. But yeah, it was a great experience, and it really boosted my confidence to know that my work can be valued in, the upper echelons of society. Like, it made me feel like my work was really good and that I should keep doing it. And she posted it on her Instagram story, like that night or the day after. And so that was like, I called it the cherry on top.
Yes. And this must have been just, I can't imagine an excellent flying high feeling, since I believe this was, you know, not too long or during the time of your diagnosis, probably not too long after, huh?
It was maybe a year, something like that, a year or two after.
How long did it take you to write this book?
It took, so I'm going to be honest with you. I was in a bit of a hypomanic state when I wrote this book. So it took me about a month.
About a month. Oh my God. That's really amazing.
But I had it edited and everything, and that took a while. The editing took about a month in itself to get everything mm-hmm. where I wanted it to be. But yeah.
Well, you done good, because most people it takes months.
Right.
Do you think you'll write anything else?
I will. I want to write more. In fact, I just wrote a children's novelette. I released it in January. Yes.
What was it called?
Oh, it's called A Leaf for Bongani.
Aw, you want to give us a little bit of a insight into the idea of the book?
Yeah, sure. So it's about a herd of giraffes, and the young bull giraffe, his name is Bongani, and the story is kind of told through his eyes, like he's the main character. But the giraffe mm-hmm. herd goes through the Congo, like they live in the Congo, and they have to go to places where they can find more water and trees to eat, acacia trees. So they travel north in the Congo, and they undergo many dangers and snares before they find a peaceful land. That's the basic concept of it. And it's to try to raise awareness about the plight of giraffes in the world, because there's only an estimated like 90,000 of them left in the wild. And so they're undergoing a silent extinction. Yeah. So that's kind of why I decided.
And not many people are talking.
Right.
Well, I'm glad
right.
you wrote about this. And I think, you know, the giraffe is such a common animal when you're young. You always think about that. You know, I remember, you know, of all the animals, you'd act like a giraffe, act like an elephant, act like a lion, you know, all these different.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine that being gone.
Right. That would be terrible.
I know I go back to that whole trust thing of putting yourself out there. I just think anybody who does that, it is a pretty amazing thing, because you can't take it back. And
right.
your listeners know, or your readers, I should say, know just so much about you. What is like the most touching or interesting thing you've read from one of your readers? I'm sure you get letters and things or comments from your readers. Is there anything that touched you that any of them have said in regards to this book?
So there was one review that I read on Amazon, and it was by this guy from, I believe it was from Australia. And he was talking about how he was going through one of the worst times of his life when he picked the book up. And he said that it helped him to realize that, you know, things can get better. Like, this is just an experience that I'm going through. And, you know, it doesn't mean the end. So, you know, that kind of thing. And so that really touched me, like that my book could have that kind of impact on someone.
You are, or at least grew up being a you know, religion was a very instrumental thing in your life. You seemed like you were pretty grounded in your religion, as was your parents, probably even more so. And you talk a little bit about that in the book. And I wonder, how did you feel when you were diagnosed being such a religious person, and then here you get hit with this bipolar?
Yeah, so initially when I was first diagnosed, I looked on my faith for strength. It was more of like that during that time, I wasn't as, you know, a zealot as I was, you know, before. But at that time, mm-hmm. I looked on my religion for strength, and I it was more of like a comfort for me initially during my initial diagnosis.
I know you talk a little bit about thinking of praying it away, or your parents wanting to, or family members wanting to. And it's interesting because I've had similar, you know, instances with my disability. And I think it's so obviously, well, to me at the time, you know, and even now sometimes people will ask, it's like they can heal you. And for me, I'm like, oh, come on, this does not work. Come on, guys. But where do you put that and still have your religion?
Wow. I guess it's like you just kind of, I think it's more that accepting, like you have to accept that, not that religion isn't a cure-all. I'm not trying to, you know, bash religion in any kind of way. But it's not necessarily a cure-all. And so you just have to, you know, Jesus died. Jesus was killed. And so things happen to people, bad things happen to good people. And I believe it's about accepting that and just trying to move forward with your, you know, put your best foot forward and go on that way.
You talk in the book about being at the treatment center, trying to get yourself on the right path. Can you talk a little about that? And was that your first entrance into a treatment center? Your first longer time entrance?
So my first long-term entrance into a psychiatric facility was after the wreck, like after the when I talk about the accident on the interstate. So that was my first time, and I was, you know, I didn't know what to expect being there, but also I wasn't entirely in my right mind the whole time that I was there. Like, I remember bits and pieces. But what I do remember is like family coming to visit. I remember making friends with some of the people there. I remember one time I was going through this big emotional breakdown. And I was like calling out for the guy that I wanted him to see me, come to the facility. Aww. And see me. Yeah.
Right.
But the nurses there, she was so gracious and so kind. And like, she just was in there and she was consoling me and trying to talk me down in the best way. And that was my biggest takeaway. Like, you may go to a place that, you know, there's so much stigma surrounded by it, but you can have one of the best, you know, experiences of your life in a place like that. And that was my takeaway from that experience.
Yeah, you talk about being in some of the facilities and that you had your probably most difficult growths in those, you know, where you're really searching, it sounds like, to find yourself and to figure out who you are and to come to grips with where your disability sits with you. What do you think played into you being able to do some of that?
I think being open played a big part. Just being open to what I could experience, like being open to the experience itself and not trying to just be like, oh, I'm in this terrible, terrible place. Like our perspective really has a big effect on how we navigate, you know, the things that happen in our lives. I mean, I found that to be true. And but yeah, my perspective is the biggest thing that helped me to be able to take those experiences and grow through them.
Do you still feel like you can kind of find the black raven in your soul when you're searching?
Oh yeah. Like even though the black raven was new to me when I wrote the book, like she's still with me to this day. And she challenges me to see the brighter side of life and the brighter side of every situation that I'm in. And that helps me to stave off depression, and it helps me to work through anxiety. And yeah, she's been a big help to me.
You know, you talk about some of your darkest times in the book at that time, and you talk about thinking of looking for a way out, mm-hmm. and how you would tell some of your friends in hopes that they would talk you out of things. And I don't think I remember reading that any of them really came up and said, don't do this. Did they? Or, I mean, did it feel like nobody was quite there? Or how did you find your way out of that dark space?
So it wasn't that they weren't there for me. Like, they were there for me. I was just not letting them, you know, get to those deepest parts of me. Like, I built walls, so to speak, mm-hmm. to, like, keep people from being able to tell that I was in such a dark place. But let's see. Being in that place, you know, that's never a good place to be. And I did seek a way out because, you know, I was just, you know, so apathetic and so numb and so, you know, lifeless. And so I sought escape, as many people do. But luckily, I did not go through with that plan.
Do you have, you know, some, I mean, I'm sure people, I don't want to use the term lucky, but there, you probably have a better term being a writer, as you are, that you at least you have a mania side, and with the ones who don't, and it's all kind of either normal or down, that must be even more difficult almost. I wonder if you have some advice that you would offer people or would think about what you would want somebody to tell you when you were experiencing, you know, the diagnosis of a mental illness.
I would say that, you know, and this is just what helps me, is knowing that it's just an experience. Like, it doesn't have to be bad, or it doesn't have to be good. It's just an experience that you go through, and how you see it is what shapes you. And so it's like almost a challenge. Like, challenge yourself to see the possibilities of good open to you, even with an illness that everyone tells you makes you a bad person.
I want to talk a little bit about your company, Equal Age.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so it's a media merchandise company, and with the goals of raising awareness about equality and also bringing together creatives and leaders for social change. And so with that, I've made t-shirts and other merchandise like that. One of the slogans is valued, saying that we're all valued regardless mm-hmm. of our race, our religion, mm-hmm. our disability, our sexual orientation, all of that. No matter what we are valued because we are human beings. And that's just the bottom line. I've done some spoken word pieces surrounding those issues that are important to me. And I believe, well, I wrote the book, I Hear the Black Raven, as a part, like my contribution to fight the stigma of mental illness under equal age. So that's just a little bit about my company.
Yeah, you know, I feel like there's a lot of, justice movements are going on out there. But I feel like the justice movements, including the disability, is not quite as there as it needs to be yet. I feel like it needs to be much more in the limelight with, you know, the different races, because it's all part of everything, right? If you don't include disability, you really don't have equality.
Right. You are so right about that.
Well, I wish you luck with the company, and I hope that does well. What do you want people to take away from this book? I'd like to hear, like, what if I had a mental illness, what would you like me to take away from the book? And then if I don't have a mental illness, what would you like me to take away? Are they different?
I would say that they wouldn't be different, simply because, like, just because the book was written to be about experiences and how you view your experiences, and whether you're disabled or whether you have a mental illness or whether you're completely healthy, you have experiences in life that you may think are good or bad. Mm-hmm. But just the takeaway is to know that those, whether they're good or bad and whether you feel good about it or not, you can always fall back on it's just an experience, and you can joy in it, or you can decide to say that it wasn't the best experience, but I can move through this and grow through this. And though that I say is the major takeaway that I want for anyone who read the book.
I think I have one more station break left, and I'll be right back.
All right.
Programming is supported by North Point Health and Wellness Center, located at Plymouth and Penn in North Minneapolis. This winter, North Point reminds you to follow the 3 W's: wash your hands, wear your mask, and watch your distance. North Point provides COVID-19 vaccinations to everyone ages 5 and up. Visit their website at northpoint.org to keep up with their vaccination plans and find out about their walk-in hours.
And you are listening to KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. This is Disability and Progress. I want to remind you that if you want to be on our email list, you can email me at disabilityandprogress@samjasmine.com. That's disabilityandprogress@samjasmine.com. You can give comments, crazy whatever, you know, you want to say, or you can find out what's coming on, because I do send out an emailer on what's coming up, so you can be informed about that as well. Found out about all the great authors, just like Amber here. So we're tonight speaking with Amber Henry, or Claire Ishii-Aotoro, and talking about her book, I Hear the Black Raven, a Petite Memoir. Amber, I want to thank you very much for coming on, first of all. So I appreciate that. Can you tell me where people can get your book?
Yeah, so it's available on Amazon. Mm-hmm. You can just type in, I Hear the Black Raven, a Petite Memoir, and it should pop up for you. And it's available on ebook and print. And there's also an audiobook available through.
Excellent, excellent. Yes. People like me always like hearing about those.
Yes. So the audiobook.
Go ahead.
The audiobook is on Google Play, and there are other platforms, but the main one is that I go to is Google Play.
Excellent. Would you like to talk about, I think you have a coaching practice as well, yes?
So about that, I did that for a while, but I discontinued because of my disability with bipolar disorder. It turned out that it wasn't the best for me, so I had to discontinue that.
Well, you know, you try a little bit of everything, and it sounds like you kind of have, and that's how you find out what you like to do and what you don't, right?
Exactly.
So is there anything else you'd like to leave us with?
I just hope that, you know, the people who are listening, like, whatever you're going through, there's always hope. And so don't give up hope, and don't let your situation, you know, dictate how you're going to perceive or enjoy your life.
So Amber, you know, you didn't think you'd be able to talk so long. Like, you're a writer, girl. You can talk. I really enjoyed really learning about you and finding out more about your book. So thank you very much.
Hang on.
Charlene, my research person wants to ask you.
Oh, I want to commend you for writing the book and sharing your story. I worked in mental health for many, many years, and mental health issues are very complex, and most people are they're afraid to hear about it. And I commend you for putting it out there.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Well, thank you again, Amber. It was great talking with you. Good luck. And I'm going to look up the giraffe book. Can you tell us what it's called one more time?
Yeah, A Leaf for Bongani, a novelette.
A novelette. How long is a novelette?
It's like, it's between, I think it's between 5,000 and 17,000 words, something like that.
Does it have pictures?
It does. It's illustrated.
Cool. And did you illustrate it?
I didn't. This lady named Maya Mustafa from Egypt, she illustrated it.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you coming on. Okay, this has been Disability and Progress, where the views of the show are not necessarily those of KFAI or its board of directors. My name is Sam. I've been the host of the show. Miguel is my engineer. Thank you, Miguel. Charlene Dahl is my research woman. Thank you, Charlene. We've been speaking about I Hear the Black Raven, a petite memoir from Amber Henry or Claire Ishii Aotora, and talking about her book. If you want to be on my email list, you can email me at disabilityandprogress@samjasmine.com. This is KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. Thank you so much for listening. Good night. KFAI.org.